ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Who does not have access to? Jainatanan doesn't need. Just by hearing, he can do, right? Uh-huh. Actually, these things make us dull-headed. If we didn't have, then our smriti shakti would be stronger. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 10, Text 4, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Nanyata te khila guru Kateta karunat manaha Yasta ashisha ashaste Nasa bhritya savaivarnik Nanyata te khila guru Ghateta karunat manaha Yasta ashisha ashaste Nasa bhritya savaivarnik First translation. Prahlad Maharaj addressing Sri Narasimha Dev. Otherwise, O my Lord, O Supreme Instructor of the entire world, you are so kind to your devotee that you could not induce him to do something unbeneficial for him. On the other hand, one who desires some material benefit in exchange for devotional service cannot be your pure devotee. Indeed, he is no better than a merchant who wants profit in exchange for service. Is some translation going on? We need translation into Tamil, Hindi. We have one Oriya devotee here. Angrezi naya, then? So someone can do Hindi translation for Ramahari sitting there. And Tamil is being arranged. Who's doing that? Yeah, Ramahari Savyasachi Prabhu Ke Pas Baithe. Okay. Then any chatai, anything for them to sit on? Purport. It is sometimes found that one comes to a devotee or a temple of the Lord just to get some material benefit. Such a person is described here as a mercantile man. Bhagavad Gita speaks of artho jignyasur artarthi. The word artha refers to one who is physically distressed, and artharthi refers to one in need of money. Such persons are forced to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead for mitigation of their distress or to get some money by the benediction of the Lord. They have been described as sukriti, pious, because in their distress or need for money, they have approached the Supreme Lord. Unless one is pious, one cannot approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, although a pious man may receive some material benefit, one who is concerned with material benefits cannot be a pure devotee. When a pure devotee receives material opulences, this is not because of his pious activity, but for the service of the Lord. When one engages in devotional service, one is automatically pious. Therefore, a pure devotee is anyabhilashita-shunyam. He has no desire for material profit, nor does the Lord induce him to try to profit materially. When a devotee needs something, the Supreme Personality of Godhead supplies it. Yoga kshemam vahamyaham. Sometimes materialists go to a temple to offer flowers and fruit to the Lord because they have learned from Bhagavad Gita that if a devotee offers some flowers and fruits, the Lord accepts them. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Patrang pushpang palang toyam yome bhaktya prayachati tadahang bhakti upaharitam ashnami prayatatmanaha. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. Thus, a man with a mercantile mentality thinks that if he can get some material benefit, like a large amount of money, simply by offering a little fruit and flower, this is good business. Such persons are not accepted as pure devotees. Because their desires are not purified, they are still mercantile men, even though they go to temples to make a show of being devotees. Sarvo padivinir muktam tatparat vena nirmalam. Only when one is fully freed from material desires can one be purified, and only in that purified state can one serve the Lord. Hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchate. This is the pure devotional platform. This material world is full of problems. Hare Krishna. Acharyang mang vijaniyan. The Acharya has come. Acharya to the cowherd boys. In Bengal, just by looking at you, everyone will think you must be the guru. Because in Bengal, there's the idea that guru must be fat. For some reason. I guess they eat a lot of fish and that makes them fat. The reason I chose to spoke on this verse today is because we are scheduled to speak in our upcoming leaders' meeting today. One of the topics is on paying devotees. And I sent out an essay, which is a not edited or anything, but that's meant for inclusion in my book, The Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada. I hope you all got and read that essay. From it, it's very clear that Srila Prabhupada was not in favor of paying devotees, and we can understand why, if from this verse, spoken by Prahlad Maharaj, a little bit criticizing Nrsimhadev here. What are you doing? Why are you saying this to me? Why are you offering me material benefits? Hiranyakashipu, the ex-father of Prahlad, he just changed status from being the father to the ex-father, the expired father. He died in dramatic circumstances. He had a colorful life and a colorful death, literally colorful. That word, Ranga, means colorful, but specifically, am I right? Can refer to redness, is it not? Rako Ranga Charanera Pash, keep me at your reddish lotus feet. So Hiranyakashipu had done unprecedented austerities just so that he could fulfill all his material desires, which is not possible. It's not possible to fulfill all material desires because material desires are unlimited and everything in this world, material world, is limited. And Prahlad, without doing any austerities or any such thing, is being offered benedictions by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, directly, who can give more than Lord Brahma. He can even give what Hiranyakashipu wanted from Brahma, which Brahma couldn't give, which was immortality. But he's not very happy with this, and he's saying, you are the Akhila Guru, you are the guru of the entire world, but really you should know how to behave and not offer. Gurus don't offer their disciples material benedictions and turn them into merchants. But actually Krishna does for most people. He manifests in the temples, knowing very well that most people will come for fulfilling material desires. And the prime example of that is the richest temple, Tirupati. I think the Sai Baba temple surpassed it, I heard that. But anyway, people have the very correct idea that if you give to Balaji, Srinivas, you get more back. And we find throughout Andhra Pradesh, I'm not sure in Telangana so much, but in the Andhra Pradesh, we find so many businesses which are run by such and such, and a partner of whom is Srinivas, Balaji. He gets half the profit or whatever, with the idea that if he's a partner, then surely the business will go well. And we have all kinds of businesses named, just like you'll see the shop sign, Saptagiri Wines, and the Balaji Poultry Farm, and this and that. Because they have the idea that he'll bless. They really don't have any proper understanding if they make a poultry farm or a wine shop in the name of the Supreme Lord. But anyway, Krishna is prepared to reciprocate with that. But one should approach a guru not for material benedictions. One should approach him for the purpose of achieving that which is beyond everything in this material world, knowing everything within this material world to be temporary, unfulfilling, and full of misery. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jignyasu shreya uttamam. Tasmat, in this connection, in this context, means having understood that everything in the material world is fleeting and insignificant, one should approach a guru and inquire about the highest good, highest benefit. So Prahlad Maharaj is giving the guru of the entire, of the guru of everyone and everything, he's giving him a lesson. And Srila Prabhupada elaborates on this, unsurprisingly quoting the Anyabhilashita Shunyam, because Srila Prabhupada came to teach something which was unknown in the Western world and largely unknown in the Eastern world also. It's not a very well-known principle. Manushanam sahasreshu kaschid yatiti siddhaya yatatam api siddhanam kaschin maam veti tatvata. One among thousands of siddhas can know me fully, Krishna says, and siddhas, hardly anyone even tries to be a siddha, let alone attain siddhi. So only one can then, who can know Krishna? Bhaktya maam abhijanati. I can be properly known, Krishna says, by bhakti. So here Krishna, by saying bhaktya maam abhijanati, Krishna clearly refers to anyabhilashita shunya bhakti, the bhakti that is free from any other desire than to satisfy Krishna. One may know Krishna to some extent, but by mixed devotion, but it'll be mixed with wrong ideas. Just like, for instance, we might say that Chennai is the capital or state capital of Tamil Nadu. Okay, right. And the total population is 1 lakh. Wrong. So you get something right and something wrong. So in the same way, people may accept, just like we find the demigods, they hear in the Bhagavatam, they make good prayers to Krishna many times. But then their attitude, they see him as an order supplier. They perceive him as their maintainer, which he is. But he's more than the maintainer of their material desires. When Srila Prabhupada was asked what his favorite verse was, it was somewhat surprising because he hardly ever quotes it. Dharmasya apavargyasya nartho thai apakalpate nartasya dharmai kantasya nar kamo labhaya hismritaha. That dharma, this is in a section of Bhagavatam verses which is discussing the subject of dharma, both at the level of, both meaning varnashram dharma and meaning the intrinsic propensity of all living beings. So this verse says that dharma is meant for ultimate liberation, not for material gain. And one may cultivate material gain, but only for the sake of that dharma, of pursuing that dharma. In other words, one may desire a healthy life, not for the sake of a healthy life per se, but because that is generally helpful for pursuing the highest goal, and nothing else should be the goal of one's works. So this mercantile mentality, what's in it for me? But Krishna teaches us that our real self-interest is in aligning our, well, first of all, knowing who we are, as who is ourself, and then we're eternal servants of Krishna, and then aligning ourselves with Krishna's self-interest, and that's in our self-interest, to and not to try to usurp Krishna's position. Coming to the subject of paying devotees, Srila Prabhupada didn't want that, but it has become part of ISKCON's culture, out of necessity, we could say. For instance, if you have a temple and you don't have pujaris and you want pujari, then one way to get them is by paying. And actually, in one place, if we find this out, Srila Prabhupada, it wasn't so much to say that we wanted paid pujari. Srila Prabhupada said that everyone should be a preacher, everyone should go and preach, and if necessary we can pay pujaris. With the idea that if a preacher, someone who's capable of preaching, is tied up in pujari work, then better pay someone and send him out. So it wasn't to encourage the point that we should pay pujaris, but it was to emphasize that all fit and able men should be out preaching. And actually in Srila Prabhupada's his D-Day, you don't know that, you can't translate into Tamil, it says, you probably all don't know what it means. If you're born in England, you know, because we learn all these things, the glorious history of England. Actually, if the Americans hadn't been there, then Britain would probably still be Nazi now. the massive, reckless almost, assault on Maya So Srila Prabhupada sent the women out also. And anyway, I won't bother explaining. If you like, you can look up D-Day on Wikipedia or whatever. There must be 20 at least movies about it. So Srila Prabhupada, another place, or more than once, he emphasized particularly teachers and pujaris should not be paid, because if they're paid, then they're not doing it out of devotion. It's become a difficult situation within our movement. In the Western countries, there are so many temples that don't have enough devotees to run them for various reasons, which I outlined in that series of talks called "Why Is ISKCON So Wishy-Washy?" There are historical reasons how the Hare Krishna explosion turned into an implosion, and we were left with so many temples and such a situation is there that, as we've heard, in many temples in the West, the general attendance at Mangalarti, there are more deities than devotees. So what do you do in such a situation? Somehow the puja has to go on. That's the idea. So import pujaris from India, Russia, Mexico, wherever you can get them. Or another situation is you have a devoted pujari who's a brahmachari, wants to get married, needs to get married. Oh, so let them continue. They're doing nice service. In some ways, it's good to have householders as pujaris. For instance, we see that Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who was a renunciant, he appointed some of his disciples householders as the pujaris for Radharaman, with the presumably the implicit understanding that that's how the society works, caste system, that the children of those householders would continue in the next generation, and it would go on, and it's going on up to the present day, the family system of worshipping the deity. So the idea is they're stable. Renunciants, they can just get up and go away, and they don't have children. And who's how is the system going to go on? Of course, there are temples which are run where the puja is done by renunciants only, and obvious and very good example of there is at Udupi, where the Ashtamats and the other extra 3 months, I think, is it? They have 8 plus 3 months extra, and it's done by renunciants. But their whole system in the Madhva Sampradaya is also, it's very much, it interlinks, not exactly the deity worship, but interlinks with families who support and run the temples, and they're usually the pundits for teaching are householders and this and that. So that householders, the idea is that they can be steady and they can perpetuate and you see that in Udupi when you see the men with their little sons who are about 5 years old, and they're speaking in Sanskrit to them, and they're training. It goes on up to the present day. Now, previously, the system was there was no payment for pujaris anywhere, but they might get an allowance. Like in Dhaka, we see in Dwaraka, they get given prasadam, nathdwara. They're given prasadam, and it's more than their family needs, and they sell it. And they make some income like that. Because in the present day, the whole society, it runs on money. We can't imagine living without money. And previously also, there's so many Brahmins here in Sri Rangam, and they would, kings would grant, give land grants, perpetual land grants, which were later stolen away by the British wouldn't dare to do that when they were in charge. And even the Muslims, they would give land, some of them. But the Indian government dared to take that all away, the state governments. The whole culture has been dismantled. We're thinking, just going off topic a little bit, we're thinking that we have some idea how we can establish Brahmins in society. Vaishyas, not so difficult. Shudras, no problem to have Shudras. But Kshatriyas, where are they going to come from? But it was, and up till recent times, there were kings in India. And they, even though they weren't ruling per se after independence, thanks to the Statue of Unity fellow, they weren't ruling, but they had that feeling that and the subjects also felt, this is our king, and that feeling of his relationship is there. And Srila Prabhupada, he stated it in one place that Indian people, they prefer to have a king. That's their culture. But I think that's gone now. The democracy has really been very bad for India. But anyway, it was Indira Gandhi. She dismantled, she took away all the properties and this and that. And there are no kings left. Although we have dynastic, democratic rule, so to speak. Congress is dynastic party. Here in Tamil Nadu, the Maha Atheistic Party is dynastic, and even they still so Jayalalitha with her mentor, and they have an idea of parampara, but it's all perverse. The chief minister in Andhra, he's the son of the previous chief minister who died in a helicopter crash, and it goes on like that. So that idea is there. There's still the idea is there of parampara, or vansha. But an actual king, that idea is lost. So brahmanas are not supposed to take payment, especially brahmanas. Not only Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, there's no question of their taking payment. So many Kshatriyas were called all over the world to fight at Kurukshetra, and they didn't say, well, what's the wages? What do they get out of it? They don't get anything. They fight, and if they remain alive, what do they get? They get, thanks very much, you can go back home. That's all. They get their right to rule is predicated upon being available for military service when required. Vaishyas, that's the most degrading thing for a Vaishya to accept service. I saw in Bengal, what do you do for a job? What's chakri? The Bengali word is chakri for doing. It means paid service. I said, oh, I don't do chakri. I have my own business. What's his own business? He's sitting in some hole on the side of the road selling pan. But it's his own business. He's just saying, we don't serve anyone. So that pride was there. But the brahmana who accepts payment, that is described as shvavriti, the occupation of a dog. A dog cannot live happily without a master. How are we going to do this within our ISKCON? It's a big question. Well, it is in my mind anyway. I don't think it is. Well, in other people, well, it is criticized that we just have payment for others, but some Some temple presidents find it just, it's very convenient because you have all these unpaid people and they're doing it voluntarily and they're not submissive. But if you pay them, then they're bound to you and you can just, it's just like, then you just tell them what to do and they know that they if they don't do what I say, then they're out of a job. And it's a money exchange. There's no devotion. Well, I can't say there's no devotion, but it here Srila Prabhupada writes, such persons are not accepted as pure devotees because they're working for the money. The money. And we can see that, as sometimes happens, the pujari is paid and leaves to go to another temple where he gets paid more. And the temple president may even poach on devotees from other temples. How much are you getting paid? I'll give you 2,000 extra. Okay, boom, gone. Savai Varnik, mercantile mentality. We sing in the Guru Puja, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Koriya Aika Arna Koriho Mane Asha. When you finish the Guru Puja and said, when are you going to give me that pay rise? I don't desire anything else in my mind, but you better give me a pay rise, otherwise I'm not going to do the Guru Puja anymore. Years ago in London, the then temple president, erstwhile temple president, told me that, I was discussing this with him, that the pujari, after some days after Janmashtami, came with a written slip for overtime, because on Janmashtami they have their schedule, and Janmashtami they go, pujaris they go right through to 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, so overtime. Needed extra pay for that. This wasn't Srila Prabhupada's mission to come to, we can pray to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you came to the West, and by your mercy, I'm getting, how much does a person earn in dollars in the, how much, what's the average wage in America? Hmm? Don't know? $25-$30 an hour. Yeah, well, I can't work that out in terms of monthly. Anyway, Prabhupada, you're so merciful. I got this job as a pujari. No, I got this service as a pujari, and by your mercy, I'm getting $25 an hour. That's the minimum. That's the minimum. Oh, the value of the dollar has gone down a lot. Of course, half the population of Mexicans and others who are working for much less. They don't pay tax and no one cares. You'll probably find some of them cutting the White House lawn also. How did Trump get so rich? Probably on the whole America's running on that, right? Anyway, that's off the subject again. Actually, the brahmanas, they should be supported. But that culture doesn't exist in the West. And does it exist in India? I don't think so. Hardly. Definitely in ISKCON it doesn't exist. That brahmanas should be supported. There's collection for building temples. But if someone's doing some actually brahminical service, then who will support? And even if you want to support, how do you do it? Then you have to do it by monthly, it's called a stipend, right? But it works out to be payment, actually. And the pujaris and the teachers and astrologers and this and that, they all have to charge for their service. And they can't, what are they going to do? If you say, okay, I'm an astrologer and people are coming and they find it's a good astrologer, we don't ask for anything. You're not supposed to ask for anything. And then no one gives you anything. Or they give you just such a small token that you can't maintain your family. Oh, another thing I was saying, the brahmachari becomes a pujari, all is well and good, husband and wife serving, give them little stipend, and they have one kid. And then their attention, a lot of their time and attention, especially the mother, goes to the child. So you get less service and you need more money. And then it becomes less of... In the beginning, it's a good deal for the temple president because he gets... You're getting devotees who are doing good service and they're taking hardly anything because they're surrendered. But when the child comes, the whole equation changes. They need... Nowadays, having a baby is so expensive. It didn't used to cost anything, but nowadays you need to go... There are shops just selling baby items, and they need to have clothes, which previously in Tamil Nadu, even in Bengal, the children didn't have clothes, and it gets cold in the winter there. They didn't wear any clothes. All they had was this thing around their waist, which they don't put either nowadays. And they've convinced everyone that children need clothes. So they could just cover them with some cloth or so. And anyway, they poop in the clothes, but they don't because nowadays they have nappies, diapers, they're called in American English. And then you need special washing machine and powder to wash that. And you need Johnson's baby powder because they get nappy rash, but then Johnson's got sued because it's causing cancer, so find some other company and this and that. They've invented millions of ways to make everything which was normal and simple previously into something very complex. And the babies are delivered in the hospital, and then used to be the midwife would come around and do it in the home, and they do it in the hospital, and then the government hospitals are filthy and there's not enough attention, so you have to go to the private hospital, which costs a lot of money. And if they see you have you can afford it, or even if you can't afford it, they have to have a cesarean, which they call C-section now, and then that's more money, and everything's more and more money. So having children is very expensive. Then at the age of 3 months or something, they send them to the pre-kindergarten. It seems to be getting younger all the time. And then that costs money. And then the wife has to go to work to earn enough money for all of that. And she doesn't have time for the children, and it goes on and on and on. Having children is not much fun. It costs so much money to have children. And what are you going to do? Your poor pujari, who's so simple and renounced, all of a sudden he needs lots of money. And what to speak of when they get sick, which babies do a lot. There's a whole branch of medicine. What's that called? Children's? Pediatrics. Just children, because they get sick a lot. But all this, what happens then, it's a practical arrangement. You see, instead of the pujari coming, oh, I need some toothpaste. Okay, sanctioned toothpaste. My child needs to go to the doctor. Okay, sanction that. It's not practical or dignified to go all the time, I need this, I need this, I need. So just give them some money, finish. It's a practical arrangement for everyone. But it fosters the contaminated mentality of wanting to take from Krishna. That's what happens. And you're thinking, well, and then you start to think, well, the temple's got so much money, and why don't they give more to me? I need it. I'm serving. They should give me. And he's getting so much. The town president's getting so much. And he has a car in the temple's name. I don't have a car. Of course, why should a pujari need a car? Because he's supposed, just like the Agraharam is all around the temple, and they never go beyond the temple. But nowadays you have to go to the doctor, right? So you have to drive a car, and you have to go and visit your relatives somewhere else. And it goes on and on and on. Once the mercantile mentality comes in, then envy comes in. All bad qualities come from it, and therefore we're enjoined to be selfless in our service to Krishna. But then if everyone's on the payroll, then we can't even preach like that. Or if we do, it becomes hollow and people see that we're saying one thing and doing something else. What's the solution to all this? Any ideas, Nata Gauranga? Send everyone to the farm. No payment on the farm. But that won't last. Now you have dedicated devotees, but we want to have varnashram communities in which everyone's not in pure devotional mentality. That's Prabhupada's idea. Bring everyone, let them do some service. We have to be ready to accommodate, and not in the beginning. We have to have a core of dedicated devotees. But the idea is let everyone come and serve at the level they're at. And the level of many of them is do some work, join the kirtan, and be a devotee like that. And it's still up for a question, how far do we go in establishing this varnashram? We're going to have meat eating allowed. It's there in Vedic society. If you don't allow it, then you have to have slaughterhouses. If you don't allow it legally by according to Shastra, then people will do it in a non-Shastric way. So we may also sanction, if not encourage, slaughterhouses. No, sorry, not slaughterhouses. Slaughter of animals according to Vedic injunction. There's a high class way of doing it, which is forbidden in Kali Yuga. Animal sacrifices done by Ashvamedha, Gavalamb. And for the lower class people, they're still going on. They offer to Kali like this. But I think that's been banned in India now. They banned animal sacrifices. Slaughterhouses are going on, sanctioned by the government. Taking money from Balaji, and they give loans for starting slaughterhouses. Who was that? Chandra Babu Naidu made this whole culture of pisciculture, which means fish. Fish agriculture, what would you call that? Fish culture, pisciculture, fish farming, that's right. The rice fields of East Godavari, West Godavari, Krishna district especially, the most fertile, maybe they're the best rice lands in all of India, some of the best. And so many of them are fish farm zone, full of chemicals, and people get all rashes in the area from all the chemicals in the air. They went from... growing rice it makes an atmosphere, a very pious atmosphere, but it's just the opposite now, fish. So we're supposed to be establishing varnashram dharma, and Prabhupada wanted to do it immediately. If we don't do it immediately, we have to compromise with this anti-civilization that goes on in the name of civilization. Then what do? Then you have to pay people. And then they get this mentality. And then the whole movement becomes full of all this mercantile mentality. And then kirtan becomes some kind of entertainment. Temples are run on with an aim of treating people nicely so you can get money out of them. And the whole ethos of pure devotional service becomes lost by making these what we see to be necessary compromises with the anti-civilization. We become part of it practically, and we can't establish what Srila Prabhupada came to give. You had good experience or bad experience of that, trying to run a temple for 6 years, was it? On the Anyabhilashita Shunyam principle, we're here to serve Krishna for Krishna's pleasure, and battling continually against quote-unquote devotees who didn't like that at all. And they were glad to see you go. No one even said goodbye or thank you or we appreciate your service. They were glad to let the whole place sink into disorder. At least we don't have that guy trying to make us serve Krishna for Krishna's pleasure and all this high talk. They didn't like it. The whole mood in the whole country among the devotees is one of I don't know if there's a word for it, but it's mixed devotion, and from the perspective that Srila Prabhupada gave us, it seems to be not like devotion at all. It seems to be a long way from actual devotion. If you say that, they'll be very angry with you, but anyway, they're very angry with you all the time because they just don't like this idea. And we find that just as we're trying to promote pure devotional service, there'll always be someone whispering around the side trying to pull us away from that. Oh, so a grihastha, he's a devotee, he's doing some service, he's working, does some extra time, and someone comes and says, don't work so hard. You're paid to work up till 5 o'clock. Go home. And, oh, yeah, right. I don't have to. Prabhu, it's devotional service. Oh, yeah, okay. And again, on the farm, you won't have that. Because at least at the present time, the way it's set up, no one's going to go and stay. They can't stay there if they have any desire to cultivate material desires. Anyabhilashita shunya means the desire to be free of material desires. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're free of material desires because it's not very easy to become free of material desires. Generally, it doesn't happen in a flash. But that idea is there. Krishna anushilanam. Anushilanam means cultivating that sense. It's a daunting task, no doubt, to establish this Varnashram culture. But the longer we delay it, the more difficult it becomes. And what's actually happened in our movement is that the culture, which when Srila Prabhupada was present, it was a culture of selfless service. But it's changed now. And we don't hear so much about selfless service. And Varnashram the word is practically banned in official circles. Of course, if it comes in the purport, you may read it. You can't avoid that if you're giving the class, but then you don't discuss how Prabhupada wanted this and we have to do this, it's our duty to Prabhupada. Because it just doesn't fit with the reality that we're living in. We've fallen into unwittingly whatever. We're in a culture within our society of payment for service. Even I only recently heard of the idea of how a temple has paid kirtaniyas. I never heard of that before. That pujaris, yeah, I mean that's standard, even not so much in India. But I guess the grihasthas, yeah. Prabhupada said they could grihastha pujaris, but he said it should be minimal stipends, nothing more. But paid kirtaniyas. It's a new one on me. So the culture is there. How are we going to get out of that? Varnashram establishment is required, but that for the whole society, it's a completely different approach to civilization and society. Srila Prabhupada said that the four orders of life are there, whether it's officially established or not. And it seems that some of our devotees think, well, Varnashram's already there, we don't need to establish it. But no, it's not. It has to be established in Daiva Varnashram, which is clearly centered on Krishna and according to Shastric injunctions. Vaguely, we can say there are intellectuals, military class, merchants, and everyone else. But that Srila Prabhupada spoke about the scientific system of Varnashram Dharma, which helps devotees, or everyone, even non-devotees. I mean, it helps people to be pious, so at least they go to the temple to offer something to Krishna to get something in return. That's a minimal piety. And helps them to come to the platform of pure devotional service. And without that, it's difficult to maintain the spirit of pure devotional service, because we can become compromised with the demoniac civilization which is going on. And the longer we delay, the more difficult it becomes, because we just become embedded in that culture. We can't think of anything else. So we think, yeah, we have temples and people come and they chant and we give prasadam and we do festivals. Yeah, everything's fine. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? All this varnashram and selflessness, it's not practical. That's maybe for a few people, renunciants. When you get older, you renounce. And when they get older, they don't renounce, because it's just an idea. And that idea is hardly there either. How many have we seen? So many devotees, they become 50 years old, their children are grown up and married, and they never think, I have to renounce. It's there in Prabhupada's books, but they never think, because that culture is not there within our society. They nivritis sarvabhutanam. No, what is that? Pravritis sarvabhutanam. Nivritis to mahafalam. So, although Manu, most of his injunctions in the Manu Sanghita, they're all meant for people who are pursuing material enjoyment in the Varnashram system. He clearly says that nivritis to mahafalam, becoming detached from all that, that gives the greatest result. Hare Krishna. There's just some food for thought. No immediate solution. Immediate solution is sarvadhaman parityaja mame kam sharanam raja hantva sarva papebhyo moksha ishami mashucha. Immediate solution is everyone should immediately fully surrender to Krishna. But that's not happening very quickly either, realistically speaking. Hare Krishna. If anyone has any question or comment, please don't ask me now. We'll have it in our meeting, where this subject is supposed to be discussed, among other subjects. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhu evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.